Welcome back to N Express, where we are at our main event, which Ricky D could not be more excited for, because we are finally going to talk about Earthbound.
Hell yes!
If you don't know what Earthbound is, we are about to change your whole world. No? Is that a stretch of a pun? I don't know. Is that even a pun?
Not at all. No. We're going to... your mind is going to be blown.
This is one of my favorite games of all time. In fact, I think this is my favorite game of all time, and I have a classic Ricky D story. Do you want to hear my Ricky D story?
Always.
Okay, so check this out. I'm not lying. So, Tim and Aaron, you can vouch for this. For 10 weeks now, I've wanted to review Earthbound.
Yes,
right?
you've been probably dying to do this since the beginning of this podcast.
I've been sending emails, telegrams, making phone calls, sending over faxes. I even like strapped a note to like a pigeon hoping it would fly to Aaron's house so we could review this game, all right? So we had to delay the review week after week. So finally, I was like, you know what, guys, let's just review it come episode 10. Technically, episode 10 was supposed to be last week when we had to cancel one of our podcasts. Long story short, we're reviewing it this week. I finished the game for the second time on Friday night, late at night, so it was after midnight, right? I wake up the next day, I'm browsing through the internet, and I realize that it's the 20-year anniversary of Earthbound. That very same day I finished the game. Had no clue. Wow. So
I feel like I should buy a cake or something to celebrate this.
Seriously.
Right?
So what did I do? I wrote a 2,500-word love letter to the game. That's what I did, which you can find over at soundinsight.org. I highly recommend everyone check it out. So after completing this game for the second time, I honestly think that this is my favorite video game of all time. And that is why we have Chris Miller on the show. Because do you want to hear Ricky D's story number two?
Yep.
Go for it.
This is, after all, Mother 2 in Japan, so two stories seems appropriate.
There you go. Okay, so we were supposed to have not one, not two, but three guests for this very show you're listening to right now. Unfortunately, the guest for the Earthbound segment had to cancel at the very last minute because he had a family emergency, so I had no guest. So I'm at work, and I'm talking to my buddy Max, who's like this big hardcore gamer. He loves Nintendo, right? And I'm like, you know, I'm so bummed out because I really want to get a guest for Earthbound because it's like my favorite game of all time. He's like, I'll get you a guest. He whips out his phone, calls Chris, and he's like, Chris, do you want to be on a podcast? Never met Chris before in my entire life. He's like, Chris Miller is the biggest fan of Earthbound. You got to have him on the show. And just like that, about an hour ago, I booked Chris to be on the show. So here we are.
And here I am.
So Chris,
show a little more enthusiasm there, Tim. So
Chris, am I crazy? Is this game not like one of the greatest games ever made?
It really is. It really is. Again, you know, for talking about nostalgia, back in the day, it was the video stores, and I'm sure we all remember going into the video stores. We've saved up our allowance, and we're going to rent a video game. Mm-hmm. And I remember getting Earthbound that way. It had just come out, and at first, it was a little quirky. All I knew about it was ads I had seen in, like, Nintendo Power and what was the other one I read at the time?
Electronic Gaming Magazine?
Maybe.
EGM? Maybe. The greatest video game magazine of all time. It's like the holy grail, the holy Bible.
Oh, it's up there. It's like a Bible, if you're into that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And, just the more I played of it, the more I loved it. If this game does not have personality, then it's got nothing at all.
Totally. Yeah.
So like I say, that whole nostalgia factor is there for me.
I wrote in my piece, the Super NES is, without a doubt, home to some of the best, if not the best, Japanese role-playing games ever made.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So we think of games like Chrono Trigger and Final Fantasy and so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
Despite the fact that the Super NES has so many great Japanese role-playing games, I think Earthbound, for me, personally stands out as the one I like the most, the one I remember the most. And I'm comparing this to Chrono Trigger, mind you, which is, I think, one of the greatest games of all time.
Which is a tough call. I mean, Chrono Trigger really is. It was revolutionary.
Yeah. Mm. Well, actually, in episode 10 of the N Express podcast, we went through the list of the 100 greatest video games of all time, and we rearranged the list. And I am the one that ended up putting Chrono Trigger on the top spot. But for me, there's a difference between favorite and greatest, right? And the reason why this is my favorite, it's because it's the one I remember playing the most. And I wrote that Earthbound stands out as a brilliant satire about growing up. This is a coming-of-age story. and about the fears of conformity. It's about the fear of growing up and being just like everyone else, given into the man. And it's anarchy versus conformity, only conformity doesn't stand a fucking chance, right? This video game is funny, it's sad, it's dark, it's twisted, you know, it's embedded in these fears of like living in this sort of like perfect suburb that's not really perfect. It's like being in a David Lynch movie. It's like walking around in David Lynch's mind.
Like, I never thought of that comparison, but I'm picturing it right now. Picket Fences meets Earthbound. We have to make this game.
Totally. Like I kept thinking of like Blue Velvet when I started playing this game for the very first time. I was like watching David Lynch films when I was way too young to be watching them. But anyways, but so the game basically centers around four kids, and you start off as Ness, but technically you name the character, so you know the character is called Ness, but you could have called your character like Chris or Joe or whatever, right? So you name your four characters, you start off this one specific character, and there's a meteor that crashes into your town, so you play as this kid named Ness, and you're off to save the planet by collecting melodies. Like you collect melodies, like songs. So as you progress, like throughout the game, there's eight sanctuaries, and every single time you beat one of these bosses, you get a melody. It's like the weirdest thing. It's like I never thought about that. This is before the Ocarina of Time, you know what I mean? So yeah, this game is just mind-blowing. And that's just like a touch on the plot synopsis. I'm not going to really get too deep into the story because we'll be here forever.
And already we've blown minds. People are like, oh, so that's where Ness from Smash Bros. Comes from.
How many people do not know that? It's
there are probably
shocking,
a lot.
Surprising.
Know.
Who doesn't know Earthbound? Everybody should, but not enough people do. I mean,
no, or not enough people have played it.
I've introduced many people to Earthbound, and even started playing it on YouTube recently.
This is by HAL Laboratory, the same people that made Smash Bros., that make Kirby. Mm-hmm. So it's in really good hands, and they take just as much care and love and put it into this game as they do into any other game that they make. Only, Ricky, you're absolutely right. This game is immediately very dark and twisted while still being the epitome of a Nintendo game. Mm-hmm. I mean, what other game would you collect music that's just such a Nintendo thing?
And just the character designs. Just Zelda. The character designs, too.
Yeah.
I mean, like even at first glance, you would never think like this is such like a deep, dark story, you know? Because I mean, you play as kids. I mean, it was so unassuming in the beginning.
Well, it looks like a kid's game, but it's really a game about childhood from an adult point of view, and the game is really for adults. And you know, we talk about the development of the game, and you're right, HAL Studios published and developed this game with Ape Studios. So what that means is basically we had Shigatsu Itoi. I believe that's how you pronounce his name. I always screw up the pronunciation.
Shigesato?
Basically, you have this famous writer. He's a celebrity. He worked in advertising. And like this guy was like a songwriter. He was like a celebrity. But he was like, he didn't work in the gaming industry. The guy had...
He was even an actor at one point.
He was a voice actor. He worked with Studio Ghibli. Yes.
Voice actor?
Yeah, he did some of the voice work on some of the Studio Ghibli films. And so, but this guy did not know how to design video games. He just wanted to, he had the story in his head and he wanted to like flesh out the story, write it down and put it into like a video game. But you got to remember at the time in Japan, like Nintendo was like the biggest thing. So everybody was knocking at Nintendo's door and everybody wanted a piece of the pie. Everybody wanted to work for Nintendo and they all had great ideas. And most of the time, you know, when you had celebrities walking in, those ideas were terrible and they just wanted their name on like the video game and it ended up being like the worst game ever. So this guy comes in and he presents this crazy idea for this crazy adventure. And it was just like, it was like, I mean, I just like, I can't even imagine him pitching the idea, but Nintendo bought it. They were like, okay, we're going to work with you only because you are a famous writer. And that's the thing. This is why I wrote in my review that I think that this is the greatest story ever put to a video game, because it came from this professional author. Like this guy wrote novels. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm.
He was a storyteller first before he was a video game designer. He exactly. First and foremost a storyteller, and it shows.
Yeah, because the game is all about story and characters. And so the thing about this game is it's weird because it had a $2 million marketing campaign. Like, a lot of people say that it was poorly marketed, but it's not true. Nintendo tried their hardest to push this game out. It was part of the Play It Loud advertising campaign. So the Play It Loud advertising campaign was, like, really out there. It was, like, crazy. We had that crazy, like, Zelda rap commercial. And this game had a tagline that read, "This game stinks." Now, I'm going to tell you Ricky D's story number three before I move on. So when I originally published my article on Sunday, my article, the headline of my article originally read as, 20 years later, Earthbound and why this game stinks. And everyone freaked out because without even reading the article, they assumed that I hated the game because they weren't aware that that was the tagline of the game. But the game came with the very same tagline. And,
yes, it did.
And it had this, like, strange, like, marketing campaign. Like, it was weird. Like, they did not know how to market this game. So the thing about Earthbound is that it was proud to be one of the most bizarre video games released back in the 90s, and it didn't shy away from its offbeat premise. But at the same time, we here stateside, like in North America, didn't know what to do with this game. Like, it was just this weird game, and so it didn't really sell at all.
I was saying it's kind of strange because this game, out of any JRPG, seems to be more a representation of American culture over Japanese culture.
Yeah, well, the thing about the game, it's a love letter to Americana. It's like a love letter to American pop culture, but from a Japanese perspective. So it's just like it's this Japanese point of view looking into American pop culture. But there's just as much Japanese pop culture injected into the game as there is American pop culture also. So that's what makes it so weird and unique.
They, at the beginning of the game, I think it's probably the only time they mention it in the game, but they say a small town in Eagle Land. And Eagle Land, like, you think the American Eagle, and the that was the whole idea of calling their world Eagle Land. If I can just bring up and tell probably my worst memory about Earthbound, I was real young when this game came out, and again, I remember getting the magazines and seeing the ads for it. One of these really out there advertisements, one of the magazine ads, had a fold out and a scratch and sniff. And the joke was that this scratch and sniff, it stank. Unfortunately, I don't know if they went too far, but once you rip this thing open, the smell was everywhere. You practically had to burn the magazine to get the demons out of your house. Okay. It was that aggressive of a smell. But I mean, by the time you smell that and you're done throwing up and hugging the toilet due to this thing all over your arm now, you have to try this game. Like, how absurd is this going to be?
But I still don't understand why would that be like their catchphrase, though. Like, this game stinks. Like,
oh, I actually loved it. Okay, here's the thing. I'm weird, though, right? So I first discovered
it. You have to be.
Yeah, I first discovered the video game at a video store also. It was, I think the video store was called Videorama. It was like this mom and pop shop up the street. Like, I grew up next to a video store, right?
And Video Ventures was the one that I went to.
Oh, wow. I don't think we had that here in Quebec. But yeah, I actually rented the game because of the tagline. And that was enough because I'm like, this is weird. Like, it stood out from every video game on the shelf because I was like, this game is making fun of itself. Like, this is awesome. I used to watch a lot of B movies and, like, weird, like, you know, like trauma films and stuff like that. And so, yeah. And the thing about this game is, like, the tone of Earthbound is perhaps its most fascinating, like, attribute. Like, for example, there's a famous quote in the game. It's a line in the game, and it's like one of the most famous quotes from the video game. And it says, "There are many difficult times ahead, but you must always keep your sense of humor." And that's the thing about this video game. It's like you play as these kids, like adolescents, like I'm assuming they might be like 12 years old or what have you. And you see some really terrible things and experience some terrible things, but yet it has this sense of joy throughout the whole entire game, no matter what. Right. And so the thing about this video game is I don't think I've ever felt so many different emotions while playing a video game ever in my whole entire life. And I think that is why, to me, it's like my favorite video game of all time, because it just hits me in every single which way possible. I can't even express how I feel about this game. Like okay.
Hey, you're doing it well.
Along the way, this is like this is early on in the game. This is like before the midway point. There's a town, right, that is basically a huge cult. It's called the Happy Happy Village, right? Mm. So you visit the Happy Happy Village, and there's this cult running around the Happy Happy Village. And their mission statement is to paint the town red by actually painting it blue. So it's like this weird cult where everyone dresses in blue and the leaders look like the KKK.
They actually called themselves the Happy Happiests.
Yeah. And the craziest thing is that this is actually based on a real-life Japanese doomsday cult founded in 1984, which you can read about online, who dressed all in blue. And the whole point of the cult was, despite the fact that they were terrorists, they wanted to just be happy, happy. And they like there's this whole freaking amazing story that you can find online or just check Wikipedia about it. But that's the thing about this video game is that, yes, there's a lot of American pop culture references, but there's a lot of bizarre stuff that's inspired by true stories from Japan and or movies, like Japanese movies or anime or what you name it, right? There's
so much pop culture through it.
So much. Yeah, it's like if Tarantino were to ever make an 8-bit video game, it would look something like Earthbound. You know what I mean? Can we talk about the villains? There's a villain who is basically a puddle of vomit. Right? I'm not making this up.
No, that was a boss battle.
That was a boss battle.
Yeah.
Right? You fight vomit, puke. That was amazing. Like, and it still is amazing today. And it sounds silly and juvenile, but it's not. Like,
it kind of is. I got to say, I'm a fan of the game, but it kind of is. I mean,
it's
quirky in that way.
I mean, we talk about, like, fighting Barf. I mean, like, just to say, like, do we all
wasn't
remember?
Wasn't that his name? Wasn't it Master Barf?
Yeah, well, there was Mini Barf and then there was Master Barf.
Yeah, Master Barf is.
But just to say too, like, can we just remind everybody in Conquer you fight a big giant poop?
Yeah, but here's the difference between Conquer and Earthbound. This is why, like I'm saying, it's silly, but it's not, because the thing about Earthbound is, again, this is a coming of age tale, right? As you're playing this kid, and it's all about what the kid experiences, his viewpoint of the world, and what he remembers and how he sees things. You know, and that's why, like, it's all about this kid and being in his imagination. I mean, to the point where there's a pivotal moment in the game, and it comes very late in the game, and this is not really a spoiler, although this game is 20 years old, let's be honest here. There's a part in the game where Ness visits a location which basically only exists in his mind. So you basically visit a surreal location that only exists in your mind and contains your most cherished memories and your worst fears. And so the idea is that Ness has to face his dark side in order to move on and save the world. So this is a place where you must cleanse yourself of the evil within your mind. Take the time to look around, because it's your mind after all. It's so trippy. And so you have to pass this level and defeat the evil that's inside of you in order to be good enough, in order to be worthy enough to move on to the final boss and save the planet. And that's what I mean about this game. It's so trippy. Like it touches on religion, on different forms of religion, be it Buddhist or Catholics and or these crazy cults. It's this idea that there is this evil living inside each and every single one of us, you know, and Ness, the main character, has to face that evil in order to become the hero of the game.
And whenever you complete, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Bit of a spoiler, but whenever you beat that specific part of the game, which you're right is very weird and twisted, it always makes me think of the backwards talking man in Twin Peaks. But whenever you beat that, just to show that he's overcome, you end up gaining like so many experience levels. Like right there, it just gives you a whole bunch of levels just because.
Yeah, you get
just to show like, okay, now you're ready to grow up.
You get a lot of experience points. You mentioned David Lynch. Again, David Lynch. There is a sequence in this video game that looks like it came out of the Red Room from Twin Peaks. Like, there really is. There's moments in a game where a whole entire city will completely spin upside down, you'll see a mirror image of the city with these crazy neon lights everywhere. Everyone walks mm-hmm. backwards. Everyone teleports. Everyone speaks nonsense. Yes means no. No means yes. It's this game is so trippy. It's so weird. Yeah, but the thing about the game is like just the idea of like the characters, like Aaron, you mentioned like the animation and look at the characters, like right mm-hmm. away you think Peanuts, like Charlie Brown.
Yeah.
You know, see these four mm-hmm. kids walking around. It looks like they're holding hands. They look like Charlie Brown characters, like mm-hmm. Peanuts characters. And the idea is that you play this video game, and we've seen this a million times before, where you're a character who has to rescue a girl, right? Because when you start off as Ness, eventually you get to a town in which you have to save a girl named Paula who's been kidnapped. But the weird thing about this is Paula isn't a princess. She's just a girl that lives in a small town. She's the same age as you, but she's like a child prodigy. And not only do you save her once, you have to save her twice in the game. And then it turns out that the real bad guy of the game, and this, again, really isn't a spoiler, is the person you meet right at the beginning of the video game, Pokey, who's your next-door neighbor. Because he reappears throughout the whole entire game in different forms.
Pokey's a dick.
He's such a dick. Pokey's like the ultimate bad guy. Yeah.
Well, the bad
Speaking
guy that...
of the snot-nosed kid next door, we all had one of those growing up, too.
Well, yeah. Well, I never trusted snot-nosed kids anyway, so.
It is like a really, really great representation of childhood from a child's perspective, but do you think it's sort of a problem that this game almost doesn't really entertain children as well as it does adults? It's not really a kid's game at all.
Well, you see, that's funny you say that because I played it when I was a kid, and I loved it. I mean, as soon as the game starts, you get to choose the name of your characters. You get to choose what your favorite food is. You get these weird, quirky characters. You know, like, the game opens up. Like, I love sci-fi movies growing up. This looked like one of those old 50s sci-fi movies. Like, you see the meteor fall into the town, right? And then Ness wakes up and he wants to go investigate. And I'm like, oh, my God.
The police are there investigating it already.
And... yeah, it's like a Steven Spielberg film. It's like Super 8 meets like Stand By Me, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then you get these weird characters. And
just blew my mind with that Stand By Me reference.
Well, you know why? It's because he's a writer, right? And like we've discussed that he was a professional writer, a storyteller, and an author. And one of his idols was Stephen King. And so
it was likely intentional.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of Stephen King nods throughout this whole entire game.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're right, Tim. Like, how does it appeal to kids? But it did appeal to kids. Like, it really did. The thing about this game...
then, though. The problem I have. Like, I don't mean to play antagonist or to cut you off, but we're saying all these positive things. But do you think this game can stand the test of time when I don't think a kid today could be entertained by this as well as they could some other game from the same time period? I think Chrono Trigger is more direct. Mm-hmm. It guides you better. But this game is so big.
Well, it's
so
also...
open and so open-minded. Could a child today even...
Yeah, I was gonna think the same thing too. I mean, like it's easy for us now to like make like all these analogies playing the game, but it's like as a child, like you think they would always realize these things.
So you're asking the question: does it stand the test of time?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think playing it as an adult, I really love the game. I think it's very artistic, it's very well produced, and I do think it is this crazy good classic that should. Garner all this respect that we give it, but at the same time, does it hold the same test of time nearly as well as all these other games that we enjoy as well?
I think it's
very, very slow paced.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's slow. It's slow.
That's almost a problem.
Yeah, but a lot of RPGs are slow paced. I mean, granted, I feel like this game was a lot more slow paced than some of the RPGs I played before. But
yeah,
it's
comparatively, like. Final Fantasy.
Yeah, well, compared to Final Fantasy, I mean, like it took a little, you know, a little getting used to.
Whenever, if you want to go through it quickly, you can. It's, you know, fast paced, and there's always lots of wacky stuff going on. But the maps were always so full of color, so full of wacky characters, and even walking up to doors you can't walk through, your character will knock on a door and there'll be answers.
Yeah.
There was so much to explore, and it was so much fun and very rewarding to explore.
Yeah, here's the thing. I'm going to answer this question. Tim, you're right and you're wrong. It's not that you're right or wrong. There really isn't an answer because it applies to each and every single person. I mean, you know, like, we don't know. Like, here's the thing about this video game. It does start off slow, and this is one of the things I mentioned in the article I wrote. It starts off somewhat slow, but you have to do a lot of grinding, right? You have to build up the experience of the character so you're strong enough to actually face the bosses. Yeah. That's only in like the first two maps. Mm-hmm. Once you get past like the first boss, like Frankenstein and his monster, I think at that point in time, if you're powered up enough, you could speed through the game. And when I say speed through the game, you're still gonna it's still gonna take you like a few days to finish this game. You're not gonna be able to finish it overnight, okay? Mm-hmm. But my problem with role-playing games, especially Japanese role-playing games, is I just don't have the time to invest in playing all of these games because a lot of them do demand so many hours of grinding. I don't think Earthbound takes up that much time in your life. Like, I think that I'm not going to say it's going to take you like 48 hours to finish this game. Like, I think it'll still take you a few days given the fact that you're putting like a certain amount of hours into the game each and every single day. If, you know, especially if you have like because this game was released with an actual guide. It was released with a book to help because the Japanese thought Americans needed like a guide. And technically, for some of the games we actually did, and Earthbound was one of those games where you would find yourself stuck, and it would be like the most obvious thing, but you couldn't figure it out because you needed like a guide. So therefore, you had to like refer to this like guide, the style guide that they released with the game. The game
was sold with its own strategy guide.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you do, if you have a strategy guide, and nowadays we have the internet, I think you can finish this game in no time flat. Like, it's not as time consuming as like some of the Final Fantasy games, but I think it does stand the test of time. Here's the thing, it stands the test of time for anyone who has good taste in video games. Okay. And I'm not trying to be a dick or anything, but it's like someone saying Alfred Hitchcock's The Birds or Psycho doesn't stand the test of time because it's black and white, it doesn't have enough violence or special effects or action, and so kids these days won't appreciate and or like the film. Well, that's their problem.
Some kids won't.
But that movie, like Psycho, stands the test of time. It is still considered a masterpiece by people that actually know something about film. Like, it's considered a masterpiece. This game is still considered a masterpiece. So it does stand the test of time.
Visually, I would also counter, though, that like as a video game, it's an interactive medium, and if it's not actively engaging the audience anymore, then that might be problematic, especially when other games, like take Ocarina of Time for instance, or even go back older, A Link to the Past is still just as fun as it was back then.
But I think this game is just as fun as it was back then. In fact, I like this game more playing it the second time and finishing it the second time. Like, I like this game more now as an adult than I did as a kid. And again, it all boils down to entertainment. You're right, it is an interactive medium. You are in control of the character. You are, to some degree, controlling this character in a story, which is really interesting because this whole game is about destiny and everything is predetermined. And Ness is meant to be the one who saves the planet. And it's mentioned several times over and over, right? But, and so you are playing this character and you are in control of this character, and so you are interacting with the game, but I think it's still bloody entertaining. Like, I really do. Like,
my only other fear is that in terms of the battle mechanics, they are super deep and super rich. We haven't talked about this yet, which is crazy, because one of the biggest parts of the game is that Ness is telekinetic, right? Mm-hmm. You have all these crazy abilities that, and you gain more progressively throughout the game that are better and better. But he can do all of these things, like regenerate his health, or what else can he do? He can shoot fire, all sorts of stuff.
Yeah,
that no average kid can do, and it's amazing. Your favorite thing.
Yeah, it's amazing, and there's so much fun stuff to these mechanics that they built in, but they're not well represented in the actual visual piece of the medium. When you're battling an enemy, you just see a picture of the enemy and get to choose options. Do you think that's problematic?
Okay, yeah, but here's,
this action-oriented sprites like Chrono Trigger, which came out around the same time as Earthbound.
Yeah, Chrono Trigger came out, I think, like a few, like Chrono Trigger turned 20, I think it was like back in March or April. So
I thought it came out shortly after Earthbound. I know they were both 95.
It's because I'm talking about like in here in North America, I think. I'm not sure. But anyways,
both, it was 95 sometime,
Both games were released in 1995, yes. I mean, like, the thing, again, I you know, if we're going to compare Chrono Trigger to Earthbound, it's going to be a whole, like, new show here.
No, completely.
I think Chrono Trigger is a better game. I think I just prefer Earthbound because I have, like, the sentimental attachment to it. Like, it's all about nostalgia. I just prefer it. It's my favorite video game. But Chrono Trigger is just like a masterpiece also. So is Earthbound, but they're completely different. And I understand your criticism, and everyone has the same criticism when it comes to the actual battles. With the battles, though, there is something that's interesting about this game, which is different than the other Japanese RPGs of the era, is you do have this sort of counter, right? So you see your statistics, and as you get hit from an enemy, it'll start rolling down, right? It's like a spinner. And so as it starts spinning down, you can use like a special ability, like a power, to try to like restore your health before it reaches zero and before you die. Like there's these little things to having that spinner that makes it just a little bit more interesting. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes,
if you finish the battle before your life hits zero, even after you just sustained a killing hit, you still have that last chance to end the battle because the counter will stop.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And little things like that, and like having different abilities, like different powers, because it's not just you, but you play like four different characters throughout the game. And sometimes you travel with all four characters, sometimes you travel with three characters, sometimes you travel with two characters. I mean, at one point in the game, and this is like mind-blowing, I'm sorry if this is like a mild spoiler, but you know, this game is 20 years old. At one point in the game, you're playing with Ness, you have like this crazy fever dream, you wake up and you're all of a sudden a new character in a completely new setting. It's like wintertime. I'm like, what the hell is going on here? What happened to my character? You know? And then eventually you get back to Ness, and all of a sudden you have like two characters, and you have three characters, and then you lose a character, and you have two characters, and you get back the character, you have three, and then all of a sudden you lose three characters, you have one character. Like, it's amazing. It jumps back and forth. So, but I think it's still a very difficult game. I mean, this is an old school Japanese RPG game, right? So it makes no apologies for being difficult, but I don't think it's like impossible. I don't think it's like as difficult as, say, many of the games that were released around the very same time.
This is your show, but am I allowed to have a Chris story?
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. Now, we were already talking, and I thought of it again here. I wanted to mention it earlier, but I didn't want to interrupt. You're talking now about the game's difficulty, and we talked about how it actually came with its own strategy guide. I bought the game used. When I got my own copy, I bought it used, didn't get the strategy guide with it.
Oh, no.
At this time, I had not beaten the game all the way through. I had rented it once or twice from the video store. I miss going into video stores. That's off topic. Yeah. Sorry, just getting nostalgic.
I miss working at a video store.
Epic. I, with pen and paper, taking notes, and then writing it out on the computer. I didn't have the internet yet. I was from a poor family. We didn't have the internet until much later. So I wrote everything down, and I did type up on the computer, and I actually wrote my own, just by playing it myself, my own walkthrough, start to finish. I had calculated the HP, the weaknesses of all of the enemies, and I wish I still had it. It never went online, but I had a binder of a couple hundred pages that I had typed up about Earthbound.
Wow.
It was, I wish I still had it, wish I could find it. I said to my wife earlier when I was doing this that I want to rip through the closet and see if I can find this. I think I wrote it when I was about 14 years old.
You see, you could have submitted that to like starman.net and they would have published it. You know, like for anyone that's not familiar, this game has such a huge cult following. Okay, like
game, yeah.
Yeah, us fans of Earthbound, we are crazy, but in a good kind of crazy, like the nice kind of crazy. Okay, we love
all the best people are crazy.
Yeah, but this is the good kind of crazy. It's not like the kind of crazy video game fanatics who are very angry all the time. The website published two books with artwork and poems and letters and reviews and all kinds of stuff and music on the website, and they were actually like binded, like, you know what I mean, they're handmade. Okay, the website has been there since the release of the game. There's actually two major websites dedicated to Earthbound. There's starman.net and there's Earthbound Central. Okay, they're huge. Okay. The actual books, if you ever get, I think it's like specifically the second book, and I'm sure maybe you can find the music online, maybe you can find it on a torrent. They released like four CDs, and I'm not talking about the music from the video game. I'm talking about people, musicians, like their version of specific theme songs or tunes or motifs of specific characters for the video game. It's like a fan-made soundtrack for the video game. It's amazing. I'm actually going to be playing a lot of the music throughout the podcast. Okay. The fan base for this video game is nuts, and they've never released the other games in the series here in North America. So there's been fans who have actually translated the other games, and you can get like an illegal mod, so you can play the original game and the second sequel, but it's the translation is all like it's all created by actual fans of the series. Like, it's insane. Like, they're like, people love this game so much they will spend hours and hours like you coming up with a strategy guide, you know what I mean? And going back to the actual mechanics of the game, like when it comes to battling the enemies, what's cool about this game is you actually get money, right, throughout the whole entire game, and you get the money
thanks, Dad,
from your estranged dad, who never actually get to see. You only hear his voice from talking to him via the telephone, and he'll tell you, "Oh, I've deposited money into your bank account." And so you'll get all this money, which you need to, you know, buy weapons, to visit the hospital because your friend's injured and or dead, you know, to go to a hotel or a motel in which there are prostitutes hanging around, by the way, in order to recharge your stats, you know, like just little things like that that might seem silly but goes such a long way when it comes to telling the story of this video game. Because here's a character whose mom stays at home all the time. She doesn't really seem to do anything. She doesn't even really seem to acknowledge her son at all. Like, it's like she doesn't even bother to think, like, where is he at this late hour of the night? She's always doing house chores. She's always too busy for you. She's like, okay, I'm very busy now, I gotta go, bye, every time you call.
But if you get homesick, she's there for you, because you actually will get homesick in the game if you're away for too long, and to cure it, you have to call your mother.
You have to call your mom. He's not joking. Because if you don't call your mom every so often, you're useless in battle. You can't do anything in battle. You'll get homesick, yeah. And once you call your mom, it'll say you've been cured from being homesick. But then you have your dad, who seems to really want to help you. And he's always checking on you. He's always calling you up. He says, "Don't you think you need to take a break?" Which is basically the game saying, "Hey, do you want to save now?" Right? But in the game, it's weird because your dad actually seems so concerned for your well-being, and he's the one that's giving you money. Yet the game's in Japan is called Mudder, and here it's called Mudder 2, even though it's translated Earthbound. But that just brings me back to the idea of this is a game about this kid growing up in a small town, and it kind of feels like his parents are divorced, and he's not like he's close to his parents. But they don't really know much about this child. Mm-hmm. Like, his dad doesn't spend time with him, but he spends money on him. His mom...
But you know where the dad got all this money from, right? The neighbors. Pokey's mom and dad.
Oh, right. Yeah. Okay.
They do say that at the beginning of the game. Your dad has borrowed so much money from us and...
Yeah, no, okay, yeah. There's, like, several theories about this game, what it's about, and the characters and everything, which is really interesting, which we won't get into because you would have to play the game. But there are themes of corrupt politics and politicians and post-traumatic stress and corporate greed. Mm-hmm. Corporate greed is the best, by the way, because, like, at one point when you do reach a specific city, there's these buildings that look like they belong in the game Monopoly, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and it actually is, like, a nod to Monopoly. There's like it explores depression, capitalism, police violence. There's a scene in this game after you kill the very first boss, you have to go visit the police station, and what happens? The police kick your ass, you know. And like, the thing is, I was reading up on this article about the game, and it was like an interview with the creator of the game, and he said that not only was he pulling from American pop culture, like his favorite music, like the Beatles and Bugs Bunny and, you know, like Charlie Brown, et cetera, et cetera. But he was also pulling from headlines, from American headlines from the 90s. In this case, it was a Rodney King story, in which Rodney King got beat up by four officers and a sergeant. And in this game, you get beat up by four officers and a sergeant. And then there's a whole clan of people that are gay. And everyone was like, okay, they're homosexual. But there was like theories about what these characters were, et cetera, et cetera. And it turns out, yeah, they are. And again, going back to religious cults, and each map has its own specific color palette. So sometimes you'll have like a cold winter climate. And then sometimes you'll be at the sunny beach and you could just chill out on the beach. It's like.
Appropriately, these titles, by the way, are titled Winters and Summers. I mean, they really thought outside the box here.
You know what's really weird and embarrassing is I never clued into the name of the towns until like a few weeks ago. Because on
no.
it, yeah, did you?
Yeah.
No, never me. I'm like, that's
Ornette, Tucson.
Tucson.
Reed.
Yeah.
Forsyth.
Forsyth. 1, 2, 3. Yeah. Never flew in. Never flew in.
Wow.
I know. There's like a dinosaur museum. There's like a swamp. There's monkey caves. You go everywhere. You go into the desert. And yeah, and like I think, you know, there's so many things I could say. I think the last thing I'm gonna say is this game is often compared to Catcher in the Rye, and that's an amazing compliment. You know, like, this is a game about identity, loss, connection, finding yourself, growing up. So a lot of people say this game is like a fever dream, and some people say it's psychedelic. There are some sequences which are psychedelic,
but
to me it is like a big long fever dream, you know.
Practically every battle in the game has almost like tie-dye and the wacky colors going on in the background. And then you even have the new age retro hippie, who is just a regular enemy, but even gets his own theme music because he's awesome.
Every character gets its own theme music. Did you know that the music, like the soundtrack for Earthbound, fits 4 CDs? The soundtrack for the video game
is
bigger than most 8-bit video games released for the NES. That's a fact. It's
nice.
Okay, there is enough music here to fill 8 of the 24 megabits on the cartridge. So, like, this game was initially meant to be released on the Nintendo Entertainment System, and then they decided to release it on the Super NES because it took forever to finish the game. It's like an 8-bit presentation powered by a 16-bit processor. You know what I mean? So that's why the visual style is somewhere in between. It doesn't look as good as some of the titles released on a Super NES, but it still looks a lot better than the titles released on, like, the NES, the Nintendo Entertainment System. And by the way, Tim, for someone who's a huge fan of Pokemon, this game inspired and influenced Pokemon.
Yeah,
and
I was going to say that, though. When we talked about visual styles, I'm like, this game could stand easily the test of time, because you see this style all over in Pokemon games.
Not just Pokemon, but another game that Tim loves. Animal Crossing.
Oh, Animal Crossing too, yeah.
Majora's Mask.
Like, the whole time I played Earthbound, I'm like, wow. Or, it's like, I feel like I'm playing a Pokemon game, like, oddly enough.
It's funny that you guys are like, oh, Tim, you should love this game, because in reality, I do love this game. I just felt like playing Antagonist for a little bit, because I don't think everyone will enjoy this game, especially if you are a younger listener. You might not quite understand it. There are a lot of references of the time. But if you are a gamer who loves story, who loves probably the most lively world in a game of the time, and who really enjoys themes of nostalgia, childhood, as well as the dark truths of reality, then I think that Earthbound is definitely your game.
And speaking of which, Aaron, one of your favorite games from last year, and it actually made our list of the top 10 video games of 2014, it was the South Park game, The Stick of Truth.
Yeah.
That game would not exist if not for Earthbound.
Mm-hmm. I see that.
Yeah.
I totally agree, too.
Yeah. And this game has one of the greatest soundtracks of all time, and I'm not saying that, you know, you're going to rock out the soundtrack at a house party and everyone's gonna like love you because they're gonna think it's like the most mind-blowing thing you can dance to. I'm just saying it has one of the greatest soundtracks because it's fitting to the actual game and the story and the characters, and each character has his own little motif and theme song, etc., etc. And there are
for those who love the game, it's definitely a very memorable soundtrack and does fit every scene wonderfully.
Yeah, I think my favorite sequence in the game is when you get to the zombie infested town, and it's like a George A. Romero movie. All of a sudden it's like you have to fight a bunch of zombies, and there's like so many weird things. Just to quickly mention, you have to get a pencil eraser. Okay, when I say a pencil eraser, it's basically you meet these two scientists. They're like little kids, and there's Apple Kid and Orange Kid, and they want to create these like scientific devices for you to help you on your journey to defeat evil and save the world, right? At one point you'll reach a roadblock, and the roadblock is basically like a giant pencil statue. It's a pencil, and in order to get past the pencil statue, you need to get the pencil eraser, which is this giant, I don't know what you would call it, thing.
You never actually see what the pencil eraser looks like. No.
Yeah, so you have to rely on this like scientist kid to build you these things in order to get past these like roadblocks. There's cavemen, there's Stonehenge, there's UFOs. There's this one.
It had everything.
Yeah, at one point, in the game.
What else could you add to this game?
Well, at one point in the game, you're just shopping. You're like a mall rat. You're hanging out at the mall. You're buying some like teddy bears and whatnot. And all of a sudden, the lights go out, and one of your friends gets kidnapped. It's like amazing, and then you have to go find her and rescue her again. And I really like the first bad guy, Frank Fly, because you beat Frank Fly, and after you have to beat his evil creation, which is the Frankenstein Mark II, which is this awesome robot. These are characters I would like to see in Super Smash. Yeah. In fact, there are so many characters in this game that when the credits roll, you basically get a list of all of the characters throughout the game, and it takes forever. And if you ever do beat the game, make sure you stay to the very end, and I do mean the very end of the credits, because you'll get a nice surprise.
Yeah. Now, I recently read something online that I never found before. As I said, I started playing through this game on YouTube, and if I can plug myself for a moment, I do want to finish, but Now I'm Nothing, 1983 on YouTube. That's all one word, Now I'm Nothing, 1983. And sorry for that, shameless self-promotion, enter here. It's okay. Actually, the intro to my videos is actually the Monotoli building. In Darkside.
Oh, right.
Where it's all black and white and neon. I thought you'd get a kick out of that.
Oh, that would be awesome. That's awesome. But, yeah, that's actually my favorite like stage, like my favorite town. Well, specifically when it turns into like, you know, Darkside.
All neon and everything?
Yeah.
Even fight Dolly's clock?
It's so weird because you're in the town. It looks like a normal town. You have like these Monopoly-like buildings, you know, and all of a sudden you enter a coffee shop and everything gets reversed. You walk out. Everything's like covered in neon lights. There's these crazy blonde surfer dudes running about, and every time you talk to one of these blonde like surfer dudes, you teleport to a different part of the map, like a different part of the city, and you have to find a way to get to this really weird statue which belonged to the Happy Happy cult, which is the key to defeating the big baddie of this game. Like, you have to defeat the statue first, and in order to get to the statue, you have to find a way to teleport by talking to these weird surfer dudes and these weird businessmen in the middle of the street, and you get teleported into a back alley with a sailor, like an actual, you know, dude who sails. And he
tells you about his invisible friend that you have to find.
Yeah, he won't let you enter unless you're with his invisible friend, who you have to go find even though he's invisible. So you have to go teleport back and forth through the city. And at one point, you realize that there's someone following you because you hear the voice, and this invisible guy has like a unibrow and a gold tooth. So picture like Mr. T, but like invisible. Like, I'm not joking. Yeah, and so once you get the invisible unibrow gold-toothed like villain, then you can get past the sailor who's waiting for him because I don't know why, and then they disappear, and then you can go and destroy the statue. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Moonside is like, it's like amazing. It's
Moonside,
like,
yes. I called it Darkside. What's wrong with me?
Oh, yeah. Moonside is like a warped mirror image of Foreside, which is like the fourth town you visit, and it has a secret that's more terrifying than the town itself, and the town is pretty scary. But yeah, so when you walk around this town, it feels like an out-of-body experience. Like, it feels like you're in a trance. And oh my god! Okay, when you're walking around the town, you start getting attacked by abstract art. Like art, you know, like the Mona Lisa or something will start attacking you. It's so weird.
That's the name of the enemy, too. Abstract art has attacked.
And it's got the psychedelic images. Ah, it's just this game is amazing. I want to go play it again. And there's all
you really have to play it more than once to appreciate it. You're talking about the blind man following you, and it all seems so absurd, and it is rather absurd. But as you play it more and you really think about it, there's so much to it. You really need to play through it a few times.
Yeah. There's so many great enemies like Mr. Everdread, Titanic Ant. God, there's so many.
Master Barf.
And I guess we have to quickly talk about the final villain.
I was about to ask if we do discuss probably the darkest part of the game. I remember playing this as a child and coming, or I wasn't a child, I guess I was a teenager, but coming across the final villain, and there was always something about it that just unnerved me. And I could never put my finger on it until... I think it was just 2 years ago. I watched the video. I think it was on GameTheory.com.
Matt Patch's video is amazing.
And where they actually show... Do I say it or do you want to say it?
No, I mean, the thing is, I don't really think that this is a spoiler, because first of all, it's a theory. The theory's been out there for like 15 to 20 years.
Oh, it's more years. Than a theory. It's if you've seen the fetus.
Well, yeah, but you do see the fetus. It is
a fetus.
Okay, so do you guys know what we're talking about?
No. I never finished the game, though, so...
Okay,
spoiler.
If you think you're never going to finish the game, then just watch the actual ending on YouTube, and then you can go watch Matt Patch's video, because he's amazing. There's a video, and it'll be, like, the last boss, which is Gyges, and then you'll see the ending afterwards. Because if you think Lord of the Rings, The Return of the King, has, like, five endings too many, right? This game has like 32 endings, okay? Like, it just never ends, right? But the last boss, so basically it's honestly the scariest, most trippiest, most disturbing, strangest end boss villains of any Nintendo game, maybe of any video game.
From such a funny, quirky little game, and then the end is just all at once, we're having fun, this is great, we're on a little adventure, and boom, nightmare fuel.
And like the music, like, it is terrifying. Like, play it late at night, especially like if there's like a storm with your lights out. Like, it's I'm not even exaggerating, it is honestly terrifying. So basically the writer, director, and creator of this game, when he was a kid, he accidentally watched this Japanese horror film called The Military Police and The Dismembered Beauty, okay? And so he saw a sequence in a film which basically scarred him for life, where he thought
this woman... saw it as a child.
He saw it as a child. Yeah, he thought the woman was getting raped. That's not actually what happens in the specific scene. But anyways, it messed him up. So in this game, for whatever reason, because he pulled from so many of his childhood memories and his love for American pop culture and Japanese pop culture and all the things he loved and all the things he feared, et cetera, growing up. And so he decided that, you know what? This is what scarred me as a kid. So the final villain of this game is going to be this giant creature, this alien creature. In order to get to this creature, you have to walk through a maze which looks like an intestine. And then you get to the end, and the creature looks like
the birthing canal.
Yeah, exactly.
I've read theories that say it's supposed to represent the birthing canal.
Yeah, well, there's different theories. And then when you get to the final, when you actually do reach Gyges, you do see an image of a fetus, and it's trippy, and so the thing is, they deny these theories. Like, they say, well, that's just like coincidence, like we never actually meant to make it look like a fetus, but it's there.
Oh, it looks just like a fetus, though. There's one still that I saw on YouTube, and they paused it just the second, and they even put like a little bright green outline around it so you can't miss it, and it's a fetus.
Yeah. Did you know the backstory of the actual baddie?
I think I might have heard it, but go ahead.
The backstory of Gyges? Okay, well, it's basically, if you play all the video games, it's not really important. It's just basically his parents were humans from Earth. They went to a different planet, and then his dad somehow injected him with something which gave him telekinetic powers, and he went out of control and wanted to use it on evil. And then his dad decided to leave him and his mom, so he left Gyges and went back home to the planet Earth, and that's why Gyges followed him home, to destroy him and the planet.
Is this said in Earthbound, or is this in one of the other two other games?
In the first game.
Okay.
Yeah. Which sounds kind of like Ness, almost.
Exactly.
Maybe.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so creepy. It has honestly like the creepiest ending of all time, for any video game that I've played. Oh. You know, I mean, we could talk about like The Last of Us, and there's like some video games that have like really creepy, disturbing endings that will forever haunt you. But this is 1995. You know,
for the time, it was a mind blowing game. It definitely broke some boundaries for those who played it.
Yeah.
If I remembered one thing I wanted to mention earlier. After you beat the game, you mentioned the little surprise. Well, I hope I'm not spoiling whatever surprise you're talking about. But after you beat the game, you can still play it for a little bit before deciding to shut it off.
Well, that's the thing. Like, the game never ends. Like you beat the game, and you can go and visit each and every single one of the people you've met along the way, and all of the towns.
Go to any city, and you can call. apparently yeah. there is one glitch, and I do plan on doing an episode of it whenever I do finally decide to play through the rest of this game. And apparently, if you go back to the museum in...
The Dinosaur Museum?
Foreside?
Foreside, yeah.
There is a boss, and they think that it's like a glitch or an oversight in the game. There is still an enemy in there.
Oh, really?
And if you lose to this enemy, apparently the game breaks and goes all weird.
Oh.
Because you were never intended to keep fighting after beating the game. So I plan on, next time I beat this game, I plan on doing that and checking that out.
Okay, well, this game was released for the Virtual Console, and there is an advantage if you play it on the Virtual Console. You can save the game at any point. Right, and so you can start, you can restart at any point, anywhere from the game, at any time.
It's just like a state point, like an
emulator. If you play on an emulator, it's usually referred to as saving a state.
Yeah.
Yeah, they have a
and that's how I do all of my retro gaming now, is all on emulator.
Yeah, they have a different term for it, but it's the same thing.
Okay.
Yeah. And just quickly, like, because we're talking about the final villain and the story of Ness and how it relates to his. How it relates to Gygas and his family. The Japanese title of this game comes from the John Lennon song, the very famous song from John Lennon, mm-hmm. which is all about growing up without a dad, you know? So,
mm-hmm.
like, you know, yeah. And when the game was localized, oh my God, okay, there's a website called Legends of Localization. I don't know if you guys have ever heard of it, but the guy who started that website, he's one of the co-founders of Starman.net. And he has a whole section on that website about localizing this game, which in itself is a whole new podcast. Like, we could spend an hour talking about how they localized this game, but they had to be very careful because one of the major problems in bringing this kind of game stateside is you have to change all of the pop culture references. Like, there's 3 references to the Beatles, there's, like, you know, references to Rambo, Pac-Man and Donkey Kong they own, but there's, like, references to This is Spinal Tap, and there's, like, a band called the Runaway Five who resemble the Blues Brothers.
But in
a Japanese version, they really look like them. They had to change the character slightly for the American version because they were afraid of getting sued. You know, when we talk about Foreside, it's like a Monopoly board. There's like references to Bugs Bunny and Benny Hill God, there's so much stuff. Like,
it's, and that's why this game is so famous. Earthbound is an experience, if nothing else.
Yeah.
So we should probably wrap it up there. But if you have not played Earthbound, go get it on the Virtual Console as it has finally come to the Wii U. Other than that, we will have to see if Ricky and I are correct in hoping that it will be announced this time next week. We can keep our fingers crossed.
Oh my God. Please, please, for the love of God, E3, give us Earthbound 2 or 3 or 4 or 5.
Or a new one or an HD remake, which was also my prediction for E3.
Mm.
That will wrap up our review of Earthbound and our great celebration of this 20-year-old game. Thanks again for listening to NXpress. We will talk to you next time. I just gotta tell you.
outlined to you in your office, we would be very happy to have the chance of handling your new 12-inch long playing records, and I would like to see you in